Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
Welcome one, welcome all back to the Chase Thomas podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Joining me is my good friend, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. I'm just glad to be back talking college football. A lot has happened in your absence, so you know, we just got to get back to it.
How was the vacation? The vacation was good, Matt. I have not taken a vacation. I've not been at the beach in like a decade, I think. Somewhere around those lines.
And a decade?
Yeah.
So you didn't go to the beach in your 20s?
I don't think so, no.
Wow, that's insane.
Is it?
Yeah, I feel like I don't go to the beach a lot, but I feel like you just, I don't know, you, for every year or two, you kind of like manage a trip to the beach. I don't know. Maybe I'm living a luxured life. I don't know.
Well, it's not even that. It's more of like my vacations or when I get away, it's not usually to the beach, like as a fair-skinned person. And I was reminded, Matt Green, why I don't do so. Getting burned on day one.
That's fair.
It's just the beach and I do not go hand in hand. It's beautiful. Like being over there. Enjoyed it more at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock than I did at 3 o'clock or 1 o'clock. But it didn't really work for me. However, did not get the rash I used to get growing up by going in the ocean. So I'm glad that's no longer a thing for me.
I think we're all glad that that's no longer a thing for you.
But no, it was good. Had some seafood. I beat the lady by one stroke in putt-putt.
Nice. Where'd you go?
Adventure Landing in Jacksonville. You been there?
Are you into Jacksonville? Okay. No. Is it like near the landing?
No, it's just, I think, called Adventure Landing. But it was funny because I had deja vu, and like I went down there because my family's down there, and I grew up going there so much that I was kind of burnt out, and that was part of the reason I stopped going in my 20s. Just like, I've been there a lot. But I'd walked by and we were pulling in and I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I remember just being at this water park when I'm like 12 years old, my cousin, who's only a year older than me. And we went and I like had this weird just flashback of me going down this exact slide. And I was just amazed it was still there, because this was at least 18 years ago. And that stuff is still there. And just to like have those thoughts, because it was just something I had not thought about in that amount of time. And it was just, it was wild to walk and I was losing it. It was a crazy time. Like, I saw a kid in a Curt Schilling jersey. Like, that's certainly a choice to be walking around a Curt
Schilling jersey. I feel like that's the thing, the Gen Zers, man. I feel like that's their thing now. It's like the most random jersey possible you can rock. Like, like the more random, the better it is. I noticed that from like covering these high school games, seeing all these high schoolers in just like a Kevin Johnson Suns jersey or something. You're like, do you even know who that is?
Why do you think that is? What is going on there?
I don't know. I'm certainly too old to answer it. But but what was the place like? Was it underwhelming? Like that you'd hadn't seen since you were a kid. You were like, oh wow, I remember it being way better than this.
No,
it was, or was cool it shit. Like still? It was still cool.
Yeah, still nice. Cool. Like, it clearly a lot of drugs are done there. Like, a lot of high school parties happen behind the scenes. Like, it's amazing how much of the staff was like 17 years old and just been going through it with the pandemic. The putt-putt course, the end, was pretty wild, because we were there right at closing and just the kids like tackling a giraffe at one point, the fake giraffe, I should clarify. It seemed like a spot where a lot of illicit and illegal activity takes place, like after 11.
That sounds about right, man. Those are some wild years. Being 17, 18 years old. I'm sure the kids working at water parks and
right.
stuff like that.
I remember
the movie Adventureland, probably something like that.
Exactly. Like, I remember putt-putt by my old house and just the clientele and the experience, like that kind of summer job. You're just like, hey, there's going to be some crime happening here.
Hey, I wish I could tell those kids, these are going to be the greatest years of your life right now. Just soak this in. You don't want the adult responsibilities.
It is something where you get to the point where you're like, man, that just feels like a lifetime ago. Do you see that now? We saw that a lot with kids like in Florida and just the family vacation stuff. And I just see that, I guess, being in grad school here at UT, I see it a lot. And I think you and I have talked about it a little bit, just like how different kids look. And you're just like, oh my God, I'm not even close. Like, it's not even close anymore. And listening to the conversations and just the... It's all very different. You're like, oh, they have no idea. Like the kids who just, I remember rushing through undergrad or rushing through high school. I'm like, I don't know. You have your whole life for this stuff, man. And as two men who are very much in our adulthood, there's no need to rush.
I always felt old anyway. Like I obviously looked young for my age, but I always felt like old. Like I didn't get social media, you know, just like the way people just put everything out there. Like I feel like I just don't get it. Like, I don't interact. I don't engage the way other people do. And then it's like, that's my generation's thing. You know, be on Instagram and Facebook and everything. It's like, this next generation, I'm completely detached from. Like, I have no idea.
I just don't know what I'm, like, just having a kid and thinking about that a lot, and we're at that age to think about it, and just what they're going to be into. And just how they're going to communicate and everything. It's just going to be wild.
True. You're going to be your parents and like everything the kids are doing. You're like, you see the way these kids are dressed now? Oh my God. Unbelievable.
Uh-oh.
That looks cool. Oh my gosh.
As Zeus interrupts in the background, he's not a fan. He's actually very pro Gen Z.
That sounded more like Simba. I said Simba. That's my parents' dog. That sounded more like Maddox, actually.
Does he have that now? Is he grown up enough to have that?
Oh, yeah, man. Maddox, he's about 6 months old now. So he's really shooting up there. He's probably 50 pounds at this point.
How's Zeus's reformed ACL tear? is it good? Healed
Zeus
up?
Is straight. Zeus is straight. On hips is what the vet said about him. So it's definitely good for a 9-year-old Rottweiler.
There you go. Well, don't forget, folks, you can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcast. But if you are an Apple Podcast listener, make sure and leave us a 5-star rating or review. You can email us for any questions. We have a question for this week's show. We would like to answer those every week. So if you'd like to tweet us some questions for CFP for just a different segment on this show, please. Feel free to do so. You can also, like I said, email at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com with any other questions you might have about the show. But yeah, we're on Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. So if you're not already, follow along there and go check out chasethomaspodcast.com and yeah, all that good stuff. Let's talk about Luke McCaffrey, who might never be happy. Matt Green. He is leaving Louisville after just arriving. What do you think's going on there? Where is he going next? Why is it not working wherever he's going?
Yeah, I have no idea. This feels like a Tate Martell 2.0 situation right now, right? Like maybe you're just not as good as we all thought you were, you know? And you're just, you know, he might resurface somewhere else. It's just not going to be, I just don't know if he's going to be a starting quarterback at a Power 5 school at this point. Or if it's a Power 5, it's not going to be a quality program like Michigan or Louisville.
I think the play is to go to Jackson, go team up with Kiffin, and be the John Rhys Plumlee replacement out wide.
Is that right? Is he that kind of athlete?
McCaffrey's an athlete, sir. McCaffrey's got some wheels. Do you not remember that Nebraska Ohio State game last fall? He can move. McCaffrey's fast. Runs in the family. Fair. That guy can move.
That's fair.
Not much of a passer, which seems to be the problem here. Not much of a deep threat. Georgia Tech a couple years ago probably would have been the move prior to Paul Johnson's departure. I don't really, maybe Air Force is where McCaffrey should look next. Don't know his thoughts on serving, but you know. That I would not rule that out. We did not talk because I was on vacation last week about your Georgia Bulldogs getting two big time transfers, one from Clemson and one from where, Matt Green?
From LSU is the other
from
one.
From LSU, yeah. Eric Gilbert making the move as well. My question to you is this, though. It seems like I forgot which podcast I was listening to during the break. That was a cool thing I liked about being away. It was just catching up on a lot of stuff, a lot of reading, a lot of books, a lot of podcasts that I had in the queue. But it seems to me the broader sentiment is that, like, there is more pressure than ever on Georgia to win this year. Like, this is a gigantic year for Kirby Smart, and the talent level has never been more even in Athens and Tuscaloosa. Is that fair?
I mean, I think it's fair to say, like, Georgia should expect to win a national championship this year, but that's also the case basically every year and for all of the top schools. Like, every year that Georgia has that doesn't end in the national championship, it's disappointing. Like, I would say the 2017 season, like, while it was, like, heartbreaking, it wasn't, like, disappointing because Georgia accomplished so much that year, and it was, like, it's year two of Kirby Smart. You know, the championships are going to come. Like, we wish it would have happened this year, but they're going to come. So that year almost didn't even seem disappointing. But obviously, once you're one of these programs, it's national championship or bust every year. You know what I mean? Like, that's the goal. It's just, I would say the thing that's interesting, and Kirby Smart always say pressure is a privilege or whatever. I think the interesting thing is that how it seems to be so framed so negatively when you talk about Kirby Smart in Georgia. Like, when you talk about Lincoln Riley, it's like Oklahoma's loaded. They finally got a defense. They're going to have a Heisman caliber quarterback. This is going to be the best team yet. Like, this is the team that can win a national title. But with Georgia, it seems like, oh, Georgia's loaded at this position and this position. How can they not win a championship with this team? You know what I mean? Like, if they don't win a championship with this team, Kirby's never going to win one. And I'm not really sure why it seems to be framed so negatively. Like, if Georgia doesn't win a championship this year, they're probably one of the top five contenders going into 2022 and 2023 and 2024. Like, Georgia's built for the future. You know, assuming Kirby Smart continues to do what he's doing over the next several years and nothing like huge changes, or, you know, he goes to the NFL or something crazy, like, Georgia's not going anywhere. So it seems weird how it's kind of framed in this way of, like, can Georgia finally get it done, and not like Georgia's loaded, this should be their year. You know what I mean? Like, they're right now, they're like the fifth or sixth best odds to win the national championship, I think fifth. And so it's weird how this team that you're giving the fifth best odds to, you're also saying, well, if they don't win a championship, it's because the coach is terrible or the coach just can't get it done. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like it's kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth.
I don't know if it's that he can't get it done. It's just that, like, the it's kind of like the Texas thing where you just get, I'm not comparing Georgia and Texas to that much of a degree, but in terms of just, like, they're in a recruiting hotbed. They're in a place where it is almost impossible to not win with the amount of talent there, with the amount of name recognition, with the amount of history, with the amount of administration backing, the amount of boosters, all the advantages that you would ever want for a Power 5 program exist in the state of Texas and exist in the state of Georgia.
But are those the only two states that exist?
No, I mean, they're the top two, I would say, because Florida's just so many teams now in Florida, and there's so many different, like, Bama picking Florida off, Clemson picking
Florida.
But
there is a lot of talent in the state of Florida to go
around.
Correct,
but there are a lot of more teams. There's a lot more competition. Like, Texas Tech is not a competition to the University of Texas. Georgia Tech is not a competitive recruiting hotspot versus Georgia. What I'm really getting at here is, though, that, like, when you're in that position, it's almost like the Lakers, maybe, and the Celtics, and I'm trying to think, the NFL. The NFL is more of the NFL would not be a great analogy here because there's more parity there. But I think it's just more
everyone
like,
seems to be on an even playing field.
Right. And Georgia is not on an even playing field. And I'm not complaining about that necessarily. But what I am saying is that, like, I guess the New York Yankees, it's like when the Yankees don't win, you're like, do they not win more titles? You know what I mean? When they don't have one for 10
years. Except for the Braves aren't the Yankees. You know, it's like there's the Yankees and there's the Red Sox and there's the Dodgers. And the Braves are like the Washington Nationals or something. Like, they're spending money. Like, they're trying to compete. And obviously the Nationals did win one. So That might throw the comparison off a little, but you can keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that basically they are in the big game now. Mark Richt was never at this point. And Georgia, I think it's they're new to being at this point. But when Kirby recruits at this level and he is this successful in this way, I think it shows two things. One, that Georgia should have been a Power Five, just dominant program a long time ago. Like, the fact that they were not before Kirby is just, I would love to do a 30 for 30 on that. But also, there should be the expectation and the precedent should be set that, like, we are going to recruit at this level. We are the University of Georgia. And if you cannot get it done with this amount of talent, then you are not the right guy for our program. And our expectation is we will bring in somebody who will take over your players and win. Like, that is the biggest fear, is like Kirby getting ousted and somebody coming in and Larry Cokering it and just being like, yeah, we're going to win with your players. And then it's like that narrative would always follow Kirby. I'm not saying this is fair, but what I'm saying is when you have this amount of talent in this state and this program with everything set up around him this year, I think there is just this thing where it's like, you don't want to be the one top five school of this group that just hasn't had that special season after like 7 years with this amount of talent. It's just a bad look, I think.
See, but that's where I think Kirby is like damned if he does and he damned if he doesn't. Like, it's like you just said, I'm glad you said it, because a lot of people don't say it. Like, Georgia wasn't this under Mark Richt. Mm-hmm. Like, they had, you know, I would say a solid 3 or 4 years and probably Mark Richt's 15 years where they would have made like a 14 playoff or something, you know, maybe 3 or 4. And then Kirby comes in and he turns Georgia into this powerhouse. And then it seems like a lot of people are like, well, yeah, Georgia was always this powerhouse. Georgia was always like had this much talent. And it's like Georgia has always been a talented state for sure. But in the last decade or so, it definitely seems like it's getting more and more prospects. But for one, Atlanta, we've always known, is a huge transplant city. Like Georgia in general, there's a lot of people in Georgia that aren't born and raised in Georgia. And like how many national title programs that like in the last decade are there that are about a 3-hour radius from Athens, Georgia, or from Atlanta at least? You know, you got Alabama, you got Auburn, you got Florida State, you got Clemson. It's like Georgia isn't just some easy state like Louisiana. Not saying Louisiana is easy, but LSU owns the talent that comes out of Louisiana. The only other program that'll get elite players from Louisiana is pretty much Alabama. Like A&M might steal one here or there, or Texas, but like it seems like the elite talent has always stayed in Louisiana and gone to LSU. Like Georgia is this program that's surrounded by other good programs. And Tennessee also, like, obviously it's been a bad decade for Tennessee, but Tennessee is another major program that you can be closer to home and go to Tennessee and live in the state of Georgia, like you can with Clemson, like you can with Auburn, like you can with Florida State. So it's interesting how Kirby has elevated Georgia to this powerhouse recruiting level, and then people kind of come back on the other end and are just like, well, yeah, that's what you should do at Georgia. Well, that was never being done at Georgia. Kirby should get the credit for doing that at Georgia. And I think that's what seems to get lost, and that's what seems to be exclusive to the narrative about Kirby. It's like, oh yeah, Georgia's always been had this much talent. And I'm like, no, they haven't. They've never had this much talent as they've had under Kirby. Like, they've had some really talented teams, and they have some really talented skill players like Knowshon Moreno and AJ Green and Matthew Stafford. But collectively, those teams were never built like Bama, because no teams are ever built like Bama. Like they're so exclusive to just what they are. And the fact that Georgia's in this conference with Alabama, like so many teams can't get past Alabama, regardless of what conference you're in. So it's interesting just how much pressure is put on someone like Georgia. And when you talk about Oklahoma, it's been 20 years since Oklahoma won a championship too, by the way. Mm. And they don't get talked about under nearly the same microscope as Georgia does.
Yeah, but I think that's also just expectations and just the football craziness that the SEC puts out. Like, you don't want to be in that list of just Florida had their run. Bama's obviously had their run. LSU had their magical blips, and Georgia is the lone. I mean, Auburn too. We need to throw in there, having their runs. Like, Georgia's the lone program who's recruited at that level who has not had their run. But like I said, two things could be true. The point that you just made about Kirby bringing this program into a space that they had not been before, and he deserves credit for that. And also, just like, accept that this is what happens when you enter this level of football in college football, right? Like, this is just part of the deal. Ed Orgeron could win a national title and get fired the next year. Like, that is just part of recruiting at this level. Part of being a premier SEC program is just like, there's too many boosters, there's too much money at stake, there's too many crazy fans that are just like, we just saw you steal Eric Gilbert, lose George Pickens, and it was like, it never happened. Like, that's just too much talent. Like, we saw what JT Daniels looked like in the last year. You hired Todd Monken, and you evolved to the spread. Like, you are going to aerate it down, not to the level of Tennessee, like, with the Baylor raid system that Tennessee's installed this spring. But, like, I think that it's fair to expect this now, and it wasn't fair to expect it before, but now you're there. So when the expectations are raised, this is just, the temperature gets raised with it. And I think Kirby is a good coach. I think he's an excellent recruiter, which I think in a lot of cases might be more important now. But, you know, I think he's fine. I just think that this year I am very intrigued to see how the national media and Georgia fans deal with this amount of hype. Because I don't think it's ever been this, both, I don't think it's ever been this high, but also this justifiably high. You know, like, we've been hyped about Georgia teams in the past, and I'm like, I'm not believing in a Mark Richt team. No. This team has all the power, and like, I believe in JT Daniels, and I believe in this group, I believe in their system, I believe in their defense, where I'm like, yeah, this team should win the SEC this year. Like, they should do all of these things. Like, it's fair to buy into the Georgia hype.
No, it definitely is. And I when you look at the top teams, all the teams that were in the playoff, and Florida, team that beat Georgia last year, everybody has lost their quarterback, essentially. Yep. Everyone in, like, the top seven or eight of the rankings, other than Oklahoma, has lost their starting quarterback, other than Oklahoma and Georgia. So it's – they definitely have the pieces on defense and the transfer – like, essentially every weakness they had, they made
we'll
up
talk
for
about that. Be, like, talk about but, Gilbert and the Clemson kid. His name's escaping me at the moment. How they'll fit in to both sides of the ball. How is that going to work?
I think Gilbert is essentially, and Darian Kendrick is Kendrick, the Clemson player's name. Yeah, and I mean, I think he's. I mean, people question, you know, I've heard Clemson fans kind of question how good he played, how well he played last year, because he got torched against Ohio State. But that's also Justin Fields and Ohio State. Like, they were a great team. So I think, if nothing else, it was the biggest weakness by far on Georgia's team, losing both starting corners and the star nickel player. And to be able to get Tyke Smith first from West Virginia in the transfer portal, and then Darian Kendrick, to just be able to plug in a guy who's started for the last 2 years on a college football playoff, ACC championship team, or all ACC team. Like, Darian Kendrick's a big-time player. And then Eric Gilbert, I think, is essentially just going to be a wide receiver. Like, I'm sure he'll play some tight end, you know, but, I mean, this guy – you've seen him play. Like, this guy's just 6'5", 240 pounds. I think they expect him to play at, like, 230, 235. But, like, he's just a monster. So I think George Pickens was the biggest kind of, like, question mark. Or George Pickens' injury brought the biggest question mark around Georgia's offense coming to this year, because they're loaded with playmakers in the backfield and a receiver. But they didn't really have – that one guy that terrified defenses after George Pickens got hurt. So, and I mean, George Pickens could be back. I don't even know how quick these guys come back from ACLs these days, but Eric Gilbert, I think he's just going to be one more dynamic pass catcher that's just going to be a nightmare for defenses. I mean, you got, even, and if he's playing tight end, like, you got him at 6'5", 240, and you got Darnell Washington at, like, 6'8", 260, like, I just don't know how teams are going to match up with Georgia in the secondary.
That's fair. Alabama scheduling a home-and-home series with Boston College. How amped are you for this?
Yeah, I feel like last year we were like, oh, wow, so this proves we can just schedule these. We only have to schedule these games like a year or so out. We don't need to schedule them way out in the future. And then, boom, Alabama, Boston College, what, 2034?
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool. Doug Flutie's grandson is playing in that game. Who knows?
It's ridiculous. I don't know why we do this to
ourselves. But I love the home and home, man. I feel like we're done with the neutral sided games in the regular season.
I'm excited. We got to get rid of it. I think it's partly due to our influence, Matt Green.
I think it's got to be. I couldn't think of any other logical explanation. Although the Chick-fil-A kickoff, that's not going anywhere.
No,
Chick-fil-A, they're big business. They're college football. Like, they're going to keep that game every year for sure.
Yeah, no, they that's not going anywhere. Also, for whatever reason, is it just because we're from Atlanta that I don't mind it? Is that all it is? Like, if it was in Charlotte, we'd all be like, this sucks. I don't know.
I wonder, we could just be super biased, but it feels like Chick-fil-A, it feels like because it was the first one that it was legit. Like, this is a legit, like, neutral sided game to start the season. And then all these ones in Charlotte and Houston and Dallas and Arlington or whatever started.
They're all
branching
spin-offs.
Off. Yeah, you're like, what? This is garbage. This isn't college football. But yeah, in Atlanta, I don't know. Maybe it just works that way.
Jaquez Jones transferred away from Ole Miss to Kentucky with the new rule where players can transfer in conference without penalty one time now being in effect. This has taken place, so he'll be eligible to play immediately for the Wildcats. He was Ole Miss's leading tackler from last year. Big get for Kentucky, right?
Yeah, for sure. That's a this is going to be the Wild West, man. This is where we are now, the transfer portal, SEC to SEC transfers.
Did you see the, like, I think I quote tweeted this when it first was announced, where I was like, yeah, this is just going to be, like, your program will benefit more than other programs, Matt, is that, like, the Kentuckys and the Mississippi States will be the AAA and AA for the Bamas of the world, because they'll just develop, like, Mike Leach will develop a slot receiver, a speedy slot guy that was overlooked when he was coming out of high school and middle of nowhere Mississippi, and then he transfers for no penalty one time to Alabama his junior year and gets drafted.
Oh man, you might be onto something there. That'll be terrible for the have-nots, at least.
I think that's coming.
But yeah, like,
you've
already seen some teams talking about, like, not scheduling the big-time teams so that they can't scout their players and stuff like that. Like, I'm sorry. Like, if Alabama's interested in a Tulsa transfer, they're going to find ways to see his film. Like,
yeah, you're
this
not.
This is 2021. I'm sorry, guys. You're not hiding from anybody.
No, no. I would encourage you to listen to the Split Zone Duos pod this week, Bud Elliott. Really great recruiting insider for 247, previously of SB Nation. He went into detail about the new rules and how it's already working with coaches and everything. It was a fascinating hour, and just what coaches are complaining about, and just some really sad stories of kids in the portal who got kicked off the team and kicked out of school and lost their scholarship, essentially, because they put their name in the portal. They kind of tampered with another school. The other school was like, this kid sucks, and reported him for entering the portal without, like, in a way that broke the rules, and then he got dismissed from his school.
Wow.
Like, we're seeing more of that, because there's not enough room. People are just jumping the portal. Like, that's the other thing, is, like, to put a bow on that portion of the conversation, is just that, like, you and I agree, I think, that after a couple years, this will all even out. Like, we're going to see a crazy amount of transfers. We're going to see a crazy amount of tampering. But I think kids are going to see a couple years from now, all these guys moved around, and then they lost their spot, and they went to a bad situation, and this got worse, and then they could have been an NFL player, but now they're not. And then, like, all these, there's going to be so many.
And the starter at the previous school got hurt, so they would have had a chance to play.
Right, like, exactly. And I think you're going to see a lot more of those kids get told, like, hey, this is also what can happen. It happens more often than the other way. So I just think we have to get to that point.
Without a doubt, I think in 5 years, like you said, it'll work itself out. Like, right now they know that the portal will give it, but then they'll find out that the portal will take it away as well.
Exactly. We have a mailbag question from Will Chamberlain, listener on Twitter. He asks, Matt Green, is Texas back?
Well, my first, like, when I first saw the question, like, if that's all you're going to say, like, no, Texas is not back. Like, it's not even close. However, like, I'm kind of like, I don't know, in the small percentage, minority of people who feel like Tom Herman shouldn't have been fired. I feel like the popular opinion was to get rid of them, but they had some success. And Texas, you know, they'd had several years of being basically irrelevant until Tom Herman showed up. So I kind of feel like Texas is a quicker rebuild. And I mean, that's definitely what Texas fans are going to expect. So they're definitely going to judge Sarkisian and by year two or three, because that's obviously what they did with Tom Herman. But I think with what Tom Herman did as far as recruiting and just kind of getting Texas more respectable, I could definitely see Sarkisian having Texas like winning a Big 12 championship in the next like two or three years. Like I could see them, they could come back, but right now they're definitely not back.
No, I think this is probably the most optimism I've had about Texas since early Charlie Strong, I guess. But we'll see. We'll see what Sark does here. The follow-up to that question was, how will A&M fare with a new signal caller under center and some of the maroon goons gone?
Who are the maroon goons?
I have absolutely no idea.
I'll let you take this one. This is your boy,
Haynes King.
Yeah.
I think Kellen Mond did a lot of stuff well. I think he was also incredibly underwhelming at times. He was obviously not somebody who's going to win the big one, but he also did beat Florida last year, a very good Florida team. He went toe to toe with them. I think it's going to be more about Spiller in the backfield. I think it's going to be more about the defense returning a lot of pieces. I think it's going to be more about the offensive line than it will be about Haynes King, because I think he is going to be under a lot more handcuffs offensively and what he's allowed to do than what Kellen Mond was allowed to do last year. So I don't know. We'll see, but it's gonna be a gauntlet. A&M's got an interesting, difficult schedule ahead of them this fall, but the expectations are high in College Station. But he's also first year starter. And I think he's a 4-star coming out of his school and there last year a little bit, but we'll see what Jimbo's got in mind. But Mond was steady. Like, Mond wasn't going to cost you any games, but he also wasn't just going to be this breakthrough Kyle Trask late 5-year starter who just turns around and puts up a Heisman type season. So I don't know. I think there will be a drop off, but I don't think it will be as much as people might think.
Yeah, I think A&M takes a step back.
Yes.
This year. Like, maybe not a huge step, but like they got Missouri and South Carolina from the East, but I don't know. Just I feel like LSU's probably gonna be better this year, and obviously you got Alabama every year. Auburn, I feel like, is the ultimate wild card. But yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see like how optimistic people are about A&M. Like, it's kind of interesting to me because a lot of people think they're going to take a step up.
Well, I think it depends on how LSU bounces back, right? Like, and how Auburn looks with this entirely revamped situation. Like, I don't know. A lot of A&M's upside is dependent on other programs around them not living up to the hype, right?
Yeah, and it's like, if that's what you're depending on, it's like, are you actually legit, or are you just hoping other teams aren't legit?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be... That's what makes the West just so difficult to forecast. It's just that, like, if you tell me you have a good read on Mississippi State being, like, a top 10 FPI team, and where Ole Miss will be with Matt Corral being the best quarterback in the conference, and then Arkansas being better than expected last year with a new signal caller this year, and LSU just putting all their chips into this year, or Orgeron's gone, and like there's just so much uncertainty there. Like
you went 9-1 with like a really bad LSU team. Mm-hmm. Like, they were fine, they got better by the end of the year, but like for LSU standards, that's just an awful team, especially coming off a national championship. And Auburn was just, you know, firing their head coach. Like, Auburn, they were not in a good position either. So I think that 9-1 season feels good for A&M, but I'm curious how they build off of it. It might be the peak more than like the step in the upward trajectory.
Yeah, I would agree. Quickly on the state of the program series that The Athletic does, which is very good. Scott Darman did the Iowa Hawkeyes this week. I think there's not enough talk about Iowa. A lot of talk about Iowa State in this podcast. This is a very pro-Iowa pod. Matt Green, you know how I feel about the Cyclones and their college football playoff possibilities with all of their returning might and Breece Hall arguably being the best returning running back in college football this year. Guess what? They got Goodson up there in Iowa City. North Gwinnett, rise up. I had not realized this. So that's, from the piece.
That's not what we say at North Gwinnett, by the way. We don't say rise up.
No, I don't know. What does North Gwinnett say?
I don't even know, but you said rise up like it was our chant. I just had to put it out there that wasn't affiliated with North Gwinnett.
No, I think that's more of an Atlanta Falcons thing, if I recall.
That's what Falcons do.
Falcons rise up. Iowa won its final six games last year, Matt, five of which were by at least two touchdowns. The defense led the country in yards per play at 4.34 and extended, this is bonkers, extended a national best streak of 22 games of allowing 24 points or fewer. Kirk Ferentz, the longest tenured Big Ten coach, went through a tumultuous time last year, fired their long-term strength and conditioning guy, who I think Urban hired briefly back in Jacksonville, Chris Doyle, but got a lot of support, stayed in the program. He's happy. He wants to keep coaching. This program, I think, is fine. Spencer Petras is going to be an interesting piece for them this year, and like what he's going to be is going to matter a lot. But the Goodson-Sargent duo, the two-headed monster there, got some Lawrence Maroney, Marion Barber vibes up there in Big Ten country. Yeah, yeah. I see a little bit of that. But
that's a nice name drop.
They've been in the Big Ten title game since it moved to Indy once. I think there is a very real shot, and I would almost say, if I was a big Spencer Petras guy, that they should be considered the favorite to come out of the Big Ten West. You got the All-American lineman center. You've got returning guys on both sides of the ball all over the place. They're going to replace a lot at receiver, but that should be okay. But Spencer Petras was fine down the stretch for them. He's a much better quarterback when he can get the ball out quickly. He was bad, 44% passer rating when a play took longer than 2.5 seconds to develop per Pro Football Focus. But, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see if he gets pushed. They said it was an open competition this spring at quarterback. It doesn't look like my man Deuce Hogan is going to win the job, but Alex Padilla has a real shot coming from the piece. So I think the Iowa Hawkeyes, there's a lot of reason to buy into them at this moment and think that they have a reasonable shot of making a lot of noise in Big Ten this year.
I could definitely see it. And the number one thing about their 2021 season is that they avoid Ohio State on the schedule. So I feel like that's usually what spells a Big Ten championship appearance, it seems like, for those teams in the Western Division. Like, it
but you
seems like
avoid
that's
them
the,
for so long.
Yeah, it seems like that's the year, like a couple years ago, when Iowa went undefeated until the Big Ten championship. It was like they avoided all the good teams. And it's honestly, I'm not trying to hate on their 2020 season, but like Wisconsin was the one ranked team they played the entire season. Like, we'll see. I'm still in wait and see mode on the Hawkeyes, and they got Iowa State back on the schedule, so it'll be interesting.
Well, let's get into our the main event of this program, at the biggest topic for this show. A lot of breaking news coming out this afternoon. College football playoff committees to this 2021 expansion plan. I'm excited to see what it's going to ultimately entail, because I think if we're not getting the BCS back, RIP BCS, expansion makes more sense in the boring format of the four games. The proposal calls for the bracket to include the six highest ranked conference champions and the six remaining highest ranked teams as determined by the CFP selection committee. Your first thoughts when you saw this news break, Matt Green?
first thoughts when I saw 12-team playoff, I thought perfect. Like, I feel like everyone talks about, like, I don't know, there's a lot of doomsdayers out there that just feel like this is going to be the end of college football.
All right, we'll make the case. Spell it out based on what they have. Make the case for this situation.
Well, I felt like I could understand if it went to 8, a lot of people saying, well, you're going to put it to 8, you're just going to expand in a few years. I feel like that's the one thing I feel like they were showing some foresight on. Like, if we go to 8, people would just want it to 12, you know, or 16. Like, let's just go ahead and jump ahead. Let's go to 12. And I think it could be at 12 for the foreseeable future, like forever as far as I'm concerned, just because at 8, I was not sold on the automatic qualifiers. Like, just because, you know, year in and year out, some conferences can be down, and I was skeptical about the automatic qualifiers. But with 12, you got 6 conference champions and 6 at large. I feel like it's a much better situation. I feel like, in my opinion, the biggest problems with college football currently are probably, like, for most people, the same 4 teams being in the playoff every year. Just the attendance, you know, we've talked about attendance in college football, just kind of a lack of interest in the final third of the season, really. The month of November, some of these SEC schedules are just awful. They always throw the November cupcake in there. And then just so many teams are out of contention by that point. I think this is going to drive kind of how MLB did with the increase in the wild card. It's just that many more teams are now buyers at the trade deadline instead of sellers, you know, and that's good for the sport, more teams in the playoff hunt. But also players sitting out, big time marquee players sitting out bowl games. I think that was also an issue. Like, and you had these matchups that we don't get to see in college football, like Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia, Texas. Like, these are sexy matchups. You know what I mean? And like, both of those games was kind of just like, well, it would be cool if like both teams had all their players. Like, Florida had way more key players missing than Georgia did at that point. And I'm not just like making an excuse for losing, but it's like, once you know some key players aren't playing, it's like, it just changes the entire vibe of the game. It's like, now players on the field know that this game doesn't mean anything. Like, Dan Mullen saying his team played their last game 4 weeks ago, you know? That was a problem with the sport. And so for the people that love bowl games, like, I'm sorry, the playoff killed the bowl games. But, like, I think we're obviously, like, I'll admit, like, the regular season is going to lose something, you know? Like, the kick six, one of the greatest plays in college football history, like, it won't mean anything if that happened in a few years. Now Alabama will just be but honestly, if it happened in the year of the playoff, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. Alabama would have just been the 4 seed and probably beaten Auburn in a rematch or something. But so you're going to lose something from those regular season games and just how important they are. But I honestly think we should lose a little something. It's worth it for having a more satisfying postseason, having a more satisfying champion. Like, does extending it from 4 to 12, are we going to see new national champions? Like, I don't know. Like, we were also skeptical when we went from 2 to 4, and a 4 seed has won the playoff 2 different times. So I don't know about that, but we've also seen a lot of really bad college football semifinal games, and I think it's because we don't have the right teams in the final 4. I think there's been years where just team schedules are just so drastically different, and they just play just none of the same opponents, basically, and then we're supposed to judge them on who's the best. And I think we're failing to come up with who the 4 best are, and that's why I think 12 assures that we're going to get the best team in the tournament. Like, after 12, like, come on, you don't really deserve a shot to play for the championship. But if you're at 12, like, the best team is going to get to decide on the field. And I love that when they had the first round byes, that allows the regular season to still mean something. Like, the conference champions are going to get those top, well, at least the top 4 seeds. I don't know if they're going to do the top 6 on all conference champions, but I'm a big fan of it. I would be a bigger fan of, like, even more home playoff games too, but like the first round being home playoff games, like, that's going to be awesome. Like, I have no complaints about that. What about you?
I mean, I in my notes, like, this could mean 17 games for some teams.
Like, well, we could just make this regular season shorter, right?
But that's, oh no, no, that's not what
like 10 games.
That?
I mean, everyone could lose one or two games on their schedule and no one will even notice. Like, do we need to see Georgia play Murray
State? Yeah, I guess. But yeah, those cupcakes need the money. Like, they get a lot of money for playing those schools. Like, the smaller schools make a lot of money by scheduling. Kent State's made a fortune. They lost a bunch of money by losing their Power 5 matchups.
And that's cool, but I just don't really feel that bad for a team who's relying on just a paycheck loss.
I mean, it's
to
not
fund
a team. It's
program.
A university that...
Or a university, yeah. It's like, maybe you shouldn't have football if you're relying on just this one blowout game of funding your entire athletic program. Mm. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry. Like, is that harsh?
A little harsh, yeah. A little harsh, Matt Green. A little harsh. I don't know what the Golden Flashes did to you. But I don't know. I think that's just a lot to ask of these guys. A lot of these teams who have their eyes set on the NFL. Like, that's going to be a tough sell. They're like, here's some extra games for free that we're going to put on your body. Like, that is, it's a big ask. So I hope the name, image, and likeness stuff is in effect and players are making money by this point.
Is it really, though?
Hmm?
How many extra games is it really, though?
For a Bama player? A lot. Like, that's 10 games over 2 years.
It's one more game than it would currently be. If you're a top four team.
Mm. Well, I'm saying like, there's potential.
Now you're playing at eight instead of in the round of eight instead of in the round of four. Like, it's not that different. Like, I hear people say that too, but like, these guys want to play for championships. Like, they obviously, the number one goal is to go to the NFL, but these guys want to play for championships. And so as soon as these games no longer matter, like, then they're done. And everyone understands, like, yeah, they're done. Like, No harm, no foul. You know, just, you don't want to tear an ACL in this last meaningless game. Go to the NFL, make some money. But if the game isn't meaningless, then I feel like I heard Booger McFarland talking about it. Like, it was like the worst thing ever. He's like, this is all about money. Everyone just wants to make more money. And then the fans are going to enjoy it more. And then I feel like those were his only two reasons. I was like, wait. So everyone in power, everyone at the top is going to make more money and all the fans are going to enjoy the sport more. I'm failing to see where the issue is.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I do just wonder about this. So this was from ESPN's Kyle Bonagura. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name entirely, but he had this in the piece outlining the rumored setup that will be around for this playoff situation. But he said, quote, the month of November, one of the biggest issues with the 14 playoff was that it became clear about two-thirds of the way through the season, with some exceptions, which teams were going to remain relevant. This format keeps many more teams in the mix deeper into the season, which will inevitably lead to more meaningful games, speaking to your point. This will keep more fans invested for longer, which is overwhelmingly positive for the sport as a whole. Does that kind of go with what you're saying here?
Without a doubt. And I hear a lot of people acting like this is another thing to make the rich get richer, whereas I feel like this is the ultimate thing that's going to it's going to result in parity. Like, you see it already.
I disagree here. No, see, I think the results will be the same. I just think.
Well, no, you're going to see a lot of the same results because Alabama, and Ohio State, and Clemson are like the best teams.
Yeah, they're beating Coastal Carolina. Like, they're not.
They're still going to win these tournaments a lot more. But I'm saying, or they're still going to win these tournaments because they're the best teams. But what I'm saying is, like, you've seen over years, even before the transfer portal went nuts, like in college basketball, like a guy would leave a big time program or a big time conference to go to a Dayton or a Xavier or a Wichita State, one of these mid majors that like you're guaranteed you're going to play in March. You're going to get the exposure. You're going to get the eyes on you. You know what I mean? And I feel like that's what's going to happen. Like, you, if you're a player that doesn't play on like a big time SEC team or something, you know, you can go join a good Pac-12 team or go join Cincinnati, Central Florida, like some of these teams that actually have a legitimate shot to make the playoff. Like those are going to be more legitimate options for you. And we had the conversation about Central Florida and Tennessee, like how good of programs they are compared to each other. I think this like is the ultimate equalizer for programs like Cincinnati and Central Florida, like and Boise State of the world. Like you can actually get some of these guys that are going to want to play on that playoff stage. Like I think that's a huge recruiting sell. The one thing I was kind of surprised about was that it's the top six highest ranked conference champions and there's no automatic bids. I was a little disappointed. Like I understand the logic there, but I was a little disappointed because I kind of like the bid stealer, like the automatic bid, like a 15th ranked North Carolina upsets number two Clemson and gets that automatic ACC bid. You know what I mean? Like I kind of like that idea. But the way they showed it, like how it would have turned out last year, is Coastal Carolina and Cincinnati would have both gotten in because they would have both been the two highest ranked, two of the six highest ranked conference champions, and the Pac-12 would have actually still been left out. So I thought that one move seemed like the ultimate kind of like middle finger to the Pac-12 because like there's a precedent for doing this. Like we saw over the BCS how we had, I don't know if they called them the power. I don't think they called them the Power Five conferences during the BCS, but we all knew the BCS conferences, you know, and if you won those, you got an automatic bid to a BCS bowl. And maybe they saw, you know, maybe Connecticut going to the Fiesta Bowl or something. That was the what made them change their mind on this moving forward is that every conference doesn't need an automatic bid. And so it keeps us from having one of those just undeserving kind of teams out of left field if we go with the six highest ranked conference champions. What did you think about that?
I'm curious to see how they handle the group of five stuff. How many do you think they're going to ever put in here?
I mean, I could definitely see two, especially okay. If you got a couple undefeateds. Like, if you got two undefeated, like BYU and Cincinnati went undefeated, if they would have both gone undefeated last year, like,
yeah,
those are definitely both in the playoff, you know? And I think 12 also allows you to put a team in the playoff and not, like, be mad about it. You know what I mean? Like just thinking about being, like, a Georgia or Florida fan. Like, if you would have seen an 18 playoff last year and BYU and Cincinnati got in and you didn't, you'd be like, what the hell? Like, I'm sorry, you're good. But, like, the schedule that we play down here, there's no reason you should be getting in an 18 tournament. But a 12-team tournament, I feel like it gives you a little more leeway. Like, with the six at-large bids, I feel like I'm very satisfied with this format. I think they did an excellent job of, like, putting in a system that can – that has like has staying power, you know, because I think that those four first round buys, like I think those are nothing to slouch at, you know, like that's still going to be very difficult to get into the top four. And it's also going to be very beneficial. So you're not going to see teams that like rank six and seven, just like sitting players because they know they're in the playoff or something. Like people are going to want those top four seeds without a doubt.
That's true. I'm just curious to see how many. What's the earliest they could put this out? 2023, by all accounts. Was that the early reporting on this?
So I think that's what I saw.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a step in the right direction. I'm interested to see how it all works. It'll make it more fun. I think I'm interested to see how those games go more than anything. Are there less blowouts? That's something I'm curious about because the playoff games have sucked thus far. It's been a disaster, I think, and a step back from the BCS. So if this is better and we get to see Coastal play Bama, or not even just Bama, like Notre Dame competitively in a playoff game, that'll be fun. Like BYU, Zach Wilson, like getting those smaller school like Boise in there, throwing those schools in there, and then throwing the wild cards like the Iowa State too. If you don't play your game, they can sneak up on you and beat you. The Iowa State, to bring it all back. Big Cyclone Hawkeye podcast. Don't forget. I don't know. I think this is what we expected. I shouldn't say expected. I expected eight, But for them to go 12 tells me that they are very much unhappy and that there is a lot of group of five pressure. And I do not.
Well, the interesting part is one thing I've heard is that the SEC was kind of the biggest pushers of it going to 12. That the SEC was essentially like, 8 does nothing for us. 8 and 5 automatic bids, 6 automatic bids or something. Like, no, that does nothing for us. We have the potential to get 2 teams in the 4-team playoff. Like, get the fuck out of here with 8 and everyone getting an automatic bid. But then once they, this is at least what people are saying, once they went to 12, that's when the SEC was like, you know, we can get down with that. Like, SEC, that could actually benefit. And also, this is another thing, like me and my brother have brought up on multiple occasions. How do you feel about rematches? Like, I feel like the NCAA basketball tournament, like, say, you know, 4 teams get in from a conference, they're going to put those 4 teams in 4 different brackets so that they don't rematch until the very end if they have to.
Right.
Like, I think it should be an important part of the committee's job. Like, maybe you have Florida at number 8, but Alabama's the 1 seed. And so it's like you kick Florida down to the 10 seed so that you avoid a potential, if possible, if you can avoid potential rematches in the first round, because we see so few of these teams play each other that I would just hate to see a first round matchup. Like, you saw Georgia and Florida play a great game and they're number 8 and number 9. You play them against each other again in December. It's like, no, let's figure out if they're better than other teams first before they play each other again. Like, I think.
This is the Big 12 problem, right? Because Iowa State's going to have to play Oklahoma twice. And then can you imagine if they get both matched up again somehow in the playoff? They play 3 times in 1 year. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's one thing if the bracket just works out that way. But at least the early round matchups, you can
Well, this will only be an SEC problem because the ACC is not putting out multiple teams. The Pac-12 might get 2. Big 10 might get 2. I'll say the Big 10 probably will get 2. But the SEC,
I would say the Big 10 will probably get 2 most years, to be honest. Like, and just looking at how they had the bracket set up last year, if someone set up a bracket on what it would be last year, and they had Indiana as the 11 seed and Ohio State as the 3. And so I'm thinking, like, do something so that if Indiana wins, they don't have to play Ohio State in the round of 8. You know what I mean? It would just be better that way because there's probably, like, sometimes, you know, it's unavoidable. But if there's something you can do and, like, reasonably, you know, adjust the rankings, I feel like that should also be a priority for the playoff committee. And honestly, probably in the money behind it, if they potentially had 4 SEC schools in the round of 8, like, it would probably be incredible for them.
Yeah. All right, Matt Green. Well, that's all I've got. Do you have anything you would like to add as we wrap up here on this Thursday edition of the pod?
I was expecting you to be more of the doomsday crowd, more doom and gloom on this playoff.
I want to see the final. I just think it's better than the 4 team, and I think it's inevitable. It's just kind of like one of those things where it's like, I could be mad about this, or I could just accept that this is where we're heading and this is what they want. And I think most fans want this and are excited about this. So I don't know. Well, we'll have to see it all plays out, but like, this was all, it just felt inevitable. So I'm kind of like, why get all upset about the inevitability of it?
True that.
Really happy note to end this podcast on, Matt Green. For that guy down there in Tequila, Georgia, Matt Green, for myself up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, that is all I've got. Stick around for the Texas Tech portion of this podcast that will follow. Matt, thank you as always for the time, good sir. We'll be back because it's a normal schedule again next Thursday. Matt, you stay safe out there, my friend. Talk to you soon. All right, the Chase House Podcast Thursday night edition rolls on, where I am now joined by RC Maxfield and Brandon Solis, who cover the Texas Tech Raiders out there in Lubbock, Texas. RC, you're up first. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. It's hot as hell out here in Lubbock, Texas. But I'm surviving. I hope Brandon is too.
Brandon, are you surviving?
Still alive, but I'm barely breathing. But it is scorching hot, man. Like,
And it kind of hit us kind of suddenly. So,
how would you explain to someone like myself who has never experienced Texas Tech summer dry heat? How would you best articulate it, Brandon?
I tell you, it's way better than the heat in Austin, because at least you're not sweaty and, you know, swampy. It's just kind of like a dry heat. You get used to it. I mean, I've lived here my entire life, so RC, I don't know how you feel about it being from Irving.
RC,
it's a little different. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so, I mean, I was used to kind of that humidity type stuff, but Lubbock is a much nicer summer heat in terms of, like Brandon said, it's dry. So, I mean, if it's 102 degrees outside, I know that sounds like a lot, it's 102 degrees outside. If it's 102 degrees outside in Dallas, I mean, it feels like there's like 75 wet blankets on you. So, at least in Lubbock, it's bearable and there's a breeze. I mean, it's just hot and something you have to adapt to, but it's not too bad.
You have a name that was just straight out of Friday Night Lights, RC. Like, RC Maxfield, the fact that you were not a high school Texas quarterback is just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing was I was a high school quarterback.
Oh, there you go. Okay, that makes sense.
Not in Texas, though. Okay. So, yeah, I grew up a little bit in Arkansas, too, so I played high school football in Arkansas. But that doesn't make for as good as a movie.
I mean, Arkansas recruits in Texas. We know what Chad Morris was up to when he was up there. And I'm sure Sam Hartman's doing this.
He didn't do a very good job.
He didn't do a very good job, but he tried. Isn't he back in Texas like a high school coach? Did I misremember that?
Yeah. He's at Allen High School where Kyler Murray used to play.
Interesting. Everything comes full circle.
Yeah, their stadium is insane.
What is the craziest high school stadium in Texas?
Probably Allen.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say Allen. Yeah, they spent over $60 million on that thing.
At Allen, $60 million on their high school football field.
Yeah, and they messed it up the first time, so they had to redo it.
What do you mean they messed it up? What does that mean? How do you mess up a football field? What do they do?
They messed up the concourse, so like there was a big foundational crack in it, and so they had to go spend even more money on it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, this is like a double level. I mean, it's not your standard just stands. It's impressive. And that's just Allen. I mean, we can go all over.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have a pretty nice hip field here in Lubbock.
Okay.
It's not no Allen, though. I mean, Allen's got a different kind of money. That's crazy type money Allen's got.
Interesting. I want to start with Matt Wells. I have some questions about this Texas Tech football team coming this year. They had a very interesting offseason. New OC, obviously. Decisions had to be made when he brought over his entire Utah State staff. That obviously did not pan out early on during his Lubbock tenure. When you have to think about the schedule, where they're at recruiting, where they're at with their transfers, where they're at just as a whole with their program, how hot is Matt Wells' seat right now heading into the 2021 season? RC, we'll start with you.
I mean, it's got to definitely be really hot. I mean, working at Red Raider Sports, Brandon and I both know that the message board on there is calling for his head all the time, it seems like. But the thing is with Matt Wells, and rightfully so on the point that I'm about to make, that he has made some awful, and I mean awful, in-game decisions. You're kicking a field goal on second down. What are we doing here, dude? but I think the part that fans are really warming up to is how well he's recruiting. I mean, you look at what he's done from a transfer portal perspective, and he has completely changed the roster at Texas Tech. I mean, obviously the big name is Tyler Shuck from Oregon. He won a Pac-12 title last year with them up in Pacific Northwest. And then you have a plethora of guys on that defense that are Power 5 transfers, whether that's Colin Schooler, Rashad Williams, Muddy Waters. You have so many guys that are going to make a high impact on that defense. And I'm not even talking about the guys on offense, too, that are Power 5 transfers. I think that really what it comes down to is people are excited in Lubbock, and I know that Brandon is. He might be drinking too much Kool-Aid. He might have put something in it. but you look at what he's done roster-wise, and you have to be excited. It's just you've seen him the first 2 years make boneheaded decisions in games. But if that changes even slightly with this talented roster, I mean, Texas Tech could be in for a surprising season to at least people that are from the outside and not covering the team on a daily basis.
Brandon, what about you?
Pretty much hit the nail on the head there. I think the transfers he's brought in, just I think you bring the most in Power 5. I mean, and then you keep adding. I know he wants to add a couple more guys, and the talent's there on paper. And, you know, maybe if you get two of those games last year that were canceled to COVID, it's a bowl game team. You're maybe a 6-win team. So I think you kind of start there and look at that, and then you bring back and Jordan your defense. You lose Eli Howard, but, you know, you're developing Tyree Wilson, who was at Texas A&M before. He met at RC, that you call him schooler, but you still have Rico Jeffers, who was out all spring, but is going to be really healthy for you. And we've kind of turned into seeing these linebackers with Jordan Brooks, Dakota Allen, just have this NFL success, at least to get to the next level. And I think, you know, the defense in Lubbock is, I think in the Big 12 in general, it's been getting a lot better, but we're still talking about, you know, these high-powered offense. So can they stop the deep ball on defense is still a question to see if they can stop it consistently. Because it seems like they got in the groove late last year, but then if you can just start it from game one all the way to the end of the season, I think you're going to be in pretty good shape. Tyler Shuck, I think, helps this team at all aspects, at all levels. I mean, this kid's going to come in here and be your starting quarterback. And last year it was kind of the Alan Bowman, you know, and then the year before that, Jet Duffy, I believe. You know, you just kind of haven't had a consistent guy besides Patrick Mahomes. And we've seen where he's at. So it's nice to have a quarterback in here. And I think having him established will help Matt Wells' case and, you know, hopefully translating it on that talent onto the field, because as RC said, it's one thing to bring in all these transfers, all these Power 5 guys, but if you can't get it done on the field, I mean, you're going to be looking at a really, really hot seat for Matt Wells, especially after back-to-back 4-win seasons.
Yeah, I was wondering about the Tyler Shuck stuff. So is that, because that came out of left field. Like, I don't think any of us, because he wasn't going to lose his job. Like, you have the 4-star kid coming in there, but he's a true freshman. I think he would have beaten out Anthony Brown and Eugene, and he makes this jump. It was kind of odd. Like, did that catch you guys by surprise to see Tyler Shuck make the move to Lubbock?
Yeah, a little background. I mean, our boss, Chris Level, over at Red Raider Sports, you know, put in our group chat that, like, hey, we got some big news. You know, some basketball guy is coming in here or whatnot. And he's like, hey, RC, do you have a second? And I was like, yeah. So he calls me and he's like, hey, you got to keep this under wraps. But Tyler Shuck is coming to Texas Tech. And I was like, dude, stop fucking with me. What's going on here for real? Like, what's going on? Like, and he's like, no, it's happening. I was like, oh my God. Like, okay. I mean, thinking about it at first, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I mean, from the kid's perspective of your coming into a program that literally just fired its OC and is bringing back a guy that, you know, if you look at it from an outsider's point of view at TCU, didn't have the greatest offense in the world. I mean, but he didn't have full control over it. And that's why Sonny Cumbie came to Lubbock, so he could have full control of the offense. And he might not have lost his job at Oregon this year, but I think Tyler at the same time wasn't happy about what Oregon was doing in the latter half of that season, where when they got in the red zone, they were bringing in Anthony Brown, the Boston College transfer, near the goal line to do like wildcat type stuff and still have the option to pass. So I think Tyler just wanted the opportunity to come in and say like, hey, I'm that 4-star recruit. I'm the, you know, I'm that guy that people are projecting to go as a first overall pick or a first round pick in the NFL draft. And damn it, I can do it anywhere. So coming into Texas Tech in a situation where, as Brandon mentioned, I mean, the quarterback situation has been one of the worst in Power 5 the past couple of years with Alan Bowman and his injuries, Jet Duffy and his off-the-field stuff, and then Henry Columbia not being able to throw 5 yards in front of him. So, I mean, you look at what Tyler Shuck has as an opportunity here and the talent around him. It's a great opportunity, but I definitely get it from an outsider's point of view in the sense of, why the hell was he leaving Eugene to come to Lubbock, Texas? But I can tell you what, Texas Tech fans are happy to have him, and more importantly, Sonny Cumbie is.
Brandon, are you at all concerned about Sonny Cumbie's latest stop at TCU and how he'll work back in Lubbock? Or do you think this was a necessary hire that will make Texas Tech start to look and feel more like the Texas Tech that had so much success under the Mike Leach era?
Yeah, I'll go with that second option there. I think him being an alumni, or, you know, being a Texas Tech quarterback, that's just, I mean, it was just a great hire by, you know, Matt Wells, because he was in full control of replacing, you know, David Yost, who did, by the way, I think him and Sonny Cumbie both recruited Tyler, just going back to him for a second. Huh. But, you know, and that's kind of how they built that relationship. So I think that helped, you know, Matt Wells and this Red Raider offense and landing Tyler specifically. And then just kind of seeing the talent that he has to work with. And last year, I mean, RC can agree with me on this. The screen plays every third and, you know, 25. Like, I mean, you know, the play calling was just very, very terrible last year. And I think the year before that, I mean, there's no easy way to put it. And I think Cumbie kind of knows, like, hey, you know, if I don't turn this thing around and get us back to, you know, the top, you know, half of the in the country in the offense, at least, and then have Tyler Shuck as one of the top quarterbacks in the country, you know, I could lose my job. So I think seeing how they kind of handled David Yost kind of gives Sonny not an eye-opening, like, experience, but he kind of knows what the job is, and he knows what needs to be done, and he needs to get it done here because he does have the talent to do it. And
doesn't have probably the hair Cumbie guy. So, like,
no, he doesn't.
He doesn't have the hair.
He has the West Texas feel, which I think once you come to West Texas and going into basketball probably later with y'all, but, you know, Tim Tadlock, Mark Adams, they kind of just have this persona about them that fits well with the crowd. And, you know, like I said, Sonny being a guy that's been through Lubbock before multiple times, I think he's just a great hire for you. And we'll see how he kind of uses Tyler Shuck in this case and all these young receivers that are unproven that me and RC talked about on our podcast the other day.
RC, what to go positive for Matt Wells thus far? So for the Texas Tech fans who are nervous listening to this about where they're at right now with this hire, what has he gotten right? What would you say he has nailed in his time in Lubbock?
Recruiting, man. I mean, I think that when it's all said and done, I think there's two ways we're going to look at the transfer portal and how teams reacted to it. There's going to be the teams that reacted perfectly in the sense that, oh my goodness, they realized, hey, maybe the talent we don't have on the roster right now, we can go supplement that with the transfer portal and get guys that can be on campus for maybe just a year, but also guys that can be there for 2, 3, even 4 years due to the COVID year not counting last year. And I think Matt Wells is that guy. I mean, I think when we all look back at this, we're going to see that Matt Wells was ahead of the curve in this because the transfer portal's here to stay. I don't know if we're ever going to see as much activity as we did this past year, but the way that he reacted to the transfer portal and actually got guys in here that can come in and start and then also be high quality depth pieces on a roster that was just absolutely just simple and plain. It was bad. When Cliff Kingsbury got fired, it was bad. It was a bad roster. Had little depth. It had some star pieces, but outside of those star pieces, there was no depth whatsoever, and it showed. And so I think what he got right was, okay, this is what I need to do to this roster. Obviously, the bonehead decisions don't help, but I think when it's all said and done, when you look at Matt Wells in terms of did he succeed at Texas Tech? Well, the reason why he would is because he did go the transfer portal route, and if he failed, it's just because, hey, like, it didn't work out. You made bad decisions on the field, and maybe the transfer portal wasn't the right answer after all. But the way that it's going in terms of just this roster and the talent, it's hard-pressed for me not to see a way where it works well enough for them to get to a bowl game. And I know, again, we're talking about outside point of view here, but Red Raider fans would absolutely kill just to be in a bowl game. And I know that sounds terrible, but that's kind of where we're at right now in this program.
Hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong. I think the March for six is a real thing for most programs, and I think you want to be competitive against your rival, and you want to kind of rebuild this program, and you know where it's been. You know that it's Tennessee. I mean, where I'm at, it's the same kind of thing. You just want to march back towards respectability, and the schedule lends itself to 6-6. When you look at it, not a lot of appetizing games, and the losses look like guaranteed losses, but the wins look like guaranteed wins. But you know, you just want to be fun, and Tennessee's going to be running the Baylor raid this fall. So I don't know. You just want to do the little things to get fans just buying in again. And I think that's a cool thing. Do we know for sure, Brandon, if Jake Spavadal has gone after someone not in the transfer portal? Like, is their roster still just full transfers? Is that a thing at Texas State still?
I want to say I'm not a big Texas State guy, but 5-19 is pretty. Is that the record, I believe, at Texas State with him?
No, I'm saying his thing. You were talking about Matt Wells and what he's done in the portal, but I think Jake Spavadal has like driven that up to the upteenth degree. I'm pretty sure he has filled out his entire roster just with transfers. Is that right, RC?
There was a time I know that they had, I want to say it was 19 guys in their class, and all of them were transfers.
Yeah, that's what it was, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Yeah. I don't know if that's still the case, though, but, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if it was. I don't know how y'all feel about it, but I think the portal is the way of the future, and it's perfect for teams like Texas Tech, but that's just my opinion on it.
It's definitely here to stay. I think there's going to be – oh, sorry to interrupt you, Brandon. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're good. I was
trying to think of what kind of transfers you can get up to Texas State.
I mean, a lot
they
of
got a nice
guys.
River down there, yeah. Bro. Nice river.
Nice river. That's what, okay, hey,
the river.
That's what recruits are coming for. They're like, what's your river situation? So when teams are hosting this June, they're like, they better be ready to answer the river question. Do you know what Tennessee won't have to do? Answer that question, because when you drive by the campus, guess what's right there? Tennessee River wraps around the campus. It's obvious. They don't have to explain it. It's nice. Brandon, when you look at this 2021 schedule, what are your expectations? We heard RC on the March for six. Is that a possibility?
Man. I'm laughing because RC knows why I'm laughing.
Chase, you asked the wrong guy, man.
No.
You asked the wrong guy.
I'm full Kool-Aid, man. Chase, like, I'm not even kidding. I'm full Kool-Aid, man.
All right, well, walk it out for me. I'm pulling it up right now. I want to pull this up, but I want to hear from you. Okay, here we go. So they open with Houston.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When?
Oh,
yeah. NRG Stadium with Red Raider fans, majority of the crowd there.
Okay. 1-0. Stephen F. Austin.
RC and just going back into the Houston game, RC and I both agree that's a huge game. If they can pull that one off, I think it sets you up pretty good. Okay. Easy Stephen F. Austin.
2-0. FIU, the Butch Davis Bowl.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. 3-0. Mm-hmm. At Texas. So 3-1 at West Virginia. Mm-hmm. I seem to recall the Texas Tech West Virginia games are always bonkers. Am I misremembering that?
They are.
And we won the last one, I believe.
Okay. So are we going? Yeah, you're penciling
won
the
last
win.
One in Morgantown with Jet Duffy.
That's what it was. I remember that game. That game was crazy, yeah. Wasn't it?
Uh huh.
Yeah.
They're usually off the wall.
Tech had no business winning that game with a fourth-string quarterback.
I remember that. Okay. So we're looking at 4-1 right there. TCU at home.
I'll give us this one at home. So you're sitting 5-1.
You're out of your mind. At Kansas.
Thank you.
They beat TCU at home. No, they beat TCU at home. Man, Tyler Shuck is the real deal. Our defense is legit.
All right, so we're already in the middle of October. Actually, no, the end of October, and you have Texas Tech sitting at 6-1. Correct.
Are we jumping ahead because Kansas is a win?
Yeah, I was going to say, are we wondering
so,
about Kansas?
Yeah, so 6-1.
Okay.
K-State is a toss-up, but I think they take a step back this year, and I think we beat them at home.
Okay, 7-1, Texas Tech. I think we're going BCS back. I mean, we're going to cut.
This man is drinking so much Kool-Aid. Lubbock is known for drinking. Oh, I don't know what the hell he put in the Kool-Aid, but we all need some.
Maker's Mark, Maker's Mark.
Well, let me just, I didn't realize how front-loaded this schedule was, because these last four are bonkers.
Yeah.
Why did they schedule it this way?
Yeah. I don't know, but I'll
say this about
it makes it. Go ahead, Archie.
this is for Brandon. Like, he does have, like, the most important month for Texas Tech is October, because if you win 3 out of 4 against West Virginia, TCU, Kansas, and Kansas State, I can kind of see where he's coming from.
Like, you're going kinda bowling.
He's a little, well, yes, he's over the top with it, though. You're going to just laugh at him when it comes to the record he's going to say. But, Mike, I can understand it a little bit. A little bit.
Well, yeah.
You're 7-1. What do we say?
You're 7-1 right now.
Going into October?
Yeah.
Going into the day before Halloween.
Yes, at Oklahoma. Back just a cakewalk, I'm sure.
Big time loss.
Okay.
Loss. Yeah. Okay. Iowa State.
Iowa State at home.
No.
Oklahoma State at home.
This is a toss-up. This one's hard for me, but I'm going to give it to them just because it's at home, just because it's in Lubbock, and I think Tyler Shug is that much of a difference maker.
So we're at 9 wins here, going into the Baylor game.
Is it 9 or 8?
Or 8, excuse me. Yeah, that'll be 8. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. See, and I want to say 8-4. I really do.
Well, then you have to lose to Baylor.
But I'm not going to.
Yeah, but then I have to include Baylor. But I'm not going to. But that Oklahoma State game is a toss-up. I could see them easily going 0-3 right there.
When was the last time Texas Tech went 9-3? Hold on. When was the last time? You guys are the experts. When was the last time?
Mike Leach.
Was that? I was going to say, it had to be Mike Leach.
Yeah.
Oh, my
God. And then give me it in my veins, a 9-3 team against Oregon in a bowl game. Give it to me.
Sign me up. Listen, hey, Chase, don't judge Texas Tech people off of the drugs that Brandon's on, please. Don't do it.
9-3 Texas Tech.
They were 9-4 in 2009. And then they had a couple of 8-win seasons after that.
That was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
When you say it, when you put it like that, you know, that's been a long, long time. So it's due.
when you say it with facts, Brandon, it's been a long time.
Incredible.
Hey, whenever, you know, the Red Raiders are sitting at 7-1, we can do this over again, and we'll see how that feels.
I will be happy to eat my words.
There you go. Hey,
that Texas game might even be easier than the Oklahoma State game, so.
Oh my God!
But
8-4. I mean, 8-4, 9-3 at best. Okay. At worst, you're barely a bowl team. Because I mean, I think these are going to be very tough games because
they've opened
close in the past.
Incredible!
I knew as soon as you asked them out. That question, man.
Yeah,
it's a point of contention.
I knew.
It's a point of contention.
I'm probably the only person sold in Lubbock.
Okay. I mean, that's good. If you're right, you're going to be the king of Lubbock. If you are right on this, dying on this hill, this is good. I like it. But, hey, man.
Six and tie, and when they go 6-6, I mean, you'll take it.
There you go, I guess. Quickly, baseball. Like, my team plays LSU this weekend. They've become the super villains of college baseball, the Vols. Your Red Raiders are playing as well in the Super Regional. What do you expect from this Red Raiders team this weekend, and do you think they have a good shot of making the College World Series, RC?
Yeah, I think they have a really good shot. Again, it's going to be hot as hell this weekend. I think the hottest Stanford has played in all year is 75 degrees, so we're legitimately talking 30 degrees hotter here in Lubbock. Obviously, they have Arizona kids that have played in the heat on their team. But I think when you look at it, this is Tim Tadlock's best season as a head coach at Texas Tech. You think about the injuries that he's endured here with Becker gone out for the year, with Tommy John, Dobbins out for the year with Tommy John. Your best reliever, at least you think, coming into the year, out as well. You lose the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year and Dylan Noisy halfway through the year. You just got Kurt Wilson back, literally in the regionals this past weekend, and somehow you're setting yourself up to go to yet another Omaha appearance. And it's kind of a weird Stanford team. You look at what they are typically known for. When I think of Stanford, and I think a lot of people think of Stanford, they think of pitching. Well, they only really have one really good pitcher in Brendan Beck, and he'll go tomorrow night for Stanford. But after that, it's kind of like a crapshoot for them. And Texas Tech, they have three guys that as of right now are kind of pitching lights out.
Chase Hampton, who would have thought that he would be the freshman that rose to the top and is starting game one of a super regional. I don't think anybody would have said that in February that Chase Hampton would be in this position, but he is. Then you have Patrick Monteverde, the guy that you look at on the roster and you're like, why put Seton Hall on there? Well, they didn't. He actually did go to D3 Seton Hill. Now he's pitching in game two for the super regional. And then you got Mason Montgomery available as well. And one of the most high-powered offenses. I mean, Texas Tech has a good chance, but as you know, you're a Vols fan. Your team is in the same position. Every team that's still alive is a great baseball team, and it can take literally one bad bounce in the infield or the sun hits the guy right in the eye, and then you're not going to Omaha. So Texas Tech is going to have to live up to that preseason expectation they had as they were ranked the 5th team in the country, and they've lived up to that most of the year. But really it's going to come down to how does the starting rotation do? How did the two main guys out of the bullpen and Micah Dallas and Ryan Sublette, and then can Jace Young, a Golden Spikes guy, finally get a little hot as he showed he was capable of in the regional.
Brandon, what do you think? Do they make it through?
RC hit a lot of points. I think you're going to see the elements kind of play a factor here. It's going to be 140, 150 on that turf. And there's some black spots out there, man. And, you know, Coach Tadlock kind of mentioned, you really can't, replicate that kind of heat here in the year. But they do have that slight advantage of at least they get to practice here in Lubbock until, the past few days. And I think the Cardinals haven't gone past Arizona, I believe, Phoenix this whole year. So they're going to be entering Texas. Home crowd, I think the Red Raiders just have enough to get through the tank. I think you need obviously a bullpen to reach the College World Series, and I think I would take Texas Tech in this situation. And I'm a big weather guy, so it's going to go from 100 to 106, and RC is going to be out there from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. 6 degree increase.
Man, I'm going to look like the damn lobster from the Amanda Show, bro. Like, golly, bro.
Uh-huh.
That's what I look like. And also, yeah. I didn't know y'all were old enough for the Amanda Show. I thought that was before your time.
Oh no, man. I'm old, man.
How old are you, RC?
I'm 27.
Okay, that's not old. I just turned 30. I guess you're right on the cusp. You're right on the cusp.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, no, I remember Amanda before she kind of went crazy.
Yeah, the Amanda Show, the lobster. No, I looked kind of like a lobster.
I don't know if these Red Raiders would know about that show.
The what?
No, they definitely would not.
Baseball teams would. Yeah, because these guys are young.
There you go. No, I look like a lobster right now because I went to the beach this weekend, and I'm a fair-skinned person, and I put on SPF 50, and I still got cooked on my left side. I was very upset. Like, I was the dude wearing a long-sleeve shirt at the beach multiple days. You never want to be that guy, but not trying to get skin cancer later. It's the ultimate catch 22, skin cancer or a tan body. It's tough.
Yeah, I'm going to go with not getting skin cancer.
That's
for the
true
win, Alex.
That's a good
thank
point
you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really
RIP think to that man. RIP.
All right, guys. Well, what can we check out from you at Red Raider Sports this week?
Yeah, Brandon. There you go. Yeah, no, for sure. Brandon and I do the Red Raider Rundown every week. Right now, we're breaking down position groups for football this upcoming week. Tight end. We just finished wide receiver, but Brandon and I are the two main guys that cover Texas Tech football for the site. So we were at spring football and we're breaking everything down and how it looks going into the year. And then just a whole lot of baseball coverage as I'll be on the scene for that one. Hopefully only two games, because I don't know if my fair skin body can take it either, even if I lather myself in sunscreen. But yeah, I'm not going to even need SPF 50. I'm going to need like SPF 500 with how hot it gets out there. Yeah, no, they have the press box outside. Like, what are we doing here?
Do they really?
Thanks, NCAA. Yeah, thanks, NCAA.
Brutal.
Yeah, the NCAA is blaming COVID for that. So we're literally sitting on metal bleachers and just roasting, just freaking roasting. But, yeah, no, we got a lot of good quality content there. I know Ben and Matt Clare. They're keeping everybody up to date on Texas Tech recruiting, which is pretty big right now. I know there's some basketball guys on campus as well as some high-ranked football players. So just a lot of good quality content at Red River Sports right now.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, keep up the great work, guys. Don't fry. Enjoy watching Tennessee and LSU go at it this weekend, and the supervillains of college baseball move on as the Tennessee Vols and Liam Spence and friends make their way to the College World Series, where they will, you heard it here first, folks, win it all, because Tennessee, it's the year of the Vols, as you guys know. It's the year of the Vols.
Weird question real quick, Chase. Do you go to the University of Tennessee?
Yes, I do. I'm a grad student here.
Do you know Derek Holland?
I do not.
Okay, he's a professor there, and I don't know if it's like your MCON building, so media and communications or whatnot, but good friend of mine. We used to do a bunch of radio stuff at Texas Tech together. So
interesting. I might pass him.
Good old Rocky Top.
Exactly. I mean, who doesn't love it? The mountains, it was a welcome change to get away from the beach to back to the mountains. Yeah, I'm a mountain person. Right.
I don't know the last time I saw a mountain.
That's the most Texas thing I've ever heard in my life. I think that is the most Texas thing you can actually say, is I don't know the last time I saw a mountain.
Okay.
There you go. There you go. That's guys, cool. Thank you for making the time. I greatly appreciate it. We will check back in when the Texas Tech Red Raiders are, let me check my notes here, 8-1 heading into November. As
7-8. Yeah, you can put me down on that.
Incredible.
Oh, man.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, if it doesn't happen, I'll buy you a beer.
There you go. That's it. That's the one thing he's given us, RC. If he's wrong on the 8-1, I don't know. You gotta do something. I think for yourself, you gotta do something for Twitter of like the.
I'm gonna have to like get like that fantasy football stuff where like give him a sign and put him on a corner and say,
yes,
I'm an idiot sandwich or something, like just something like that.
Drink a Big Red.
Like, I have to. No, you cannot pay me enough to drink a Big Red, Brandon. Get out of here with that blasphemous take. Big Red is awful.
Never had Big Red.
Thank you. You're a logical thinker. That's good to hear.
Yeah, no, I've been logical a LaCroix thinker. Guy most of my 20s. I quit soda a long time ago, and LaCroix are my new, or have been my new thing. It's all about the seltzer life. Seltzers. It's the way to go.
It is all about the seltzers. White clawed up. No, when you got the claw, there is no laws.
That is true. People forget. All right. RC, Brandon, thank you so much for the time. We'll have to talk again soon, guys.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.